let me tell you something, brother.
What is your name?
I told you.
It doesn't matter what your name is.
Tell me. He didn't just say that.
Hey, yo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
What? 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 What?
It doesn't matter what you think.
Damn.
Have a nice day.
Shock the system.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Great Debate. Each episode features spirited discussions, deliberations, and disputes on a variety of topics that run the gamut in the world of wrestling. And now, here is your host, Andy Atherton.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 2 of Great Debate Wrestling on the PTBN Wrestling Feed. Yes, it's a little weird sometimes saying that because my usual home address is the pop feed, but tonight I'm here on the wrestling feed and with my second standalone episode of Great Debate Wrestling, so thank you all for listening. And tonight I got a trio of, I went to the old school, like not old in terms of age, but old school, like from the early days of Place to Be Nation, guys who are still around, gratefully still doing shows on different feeds, and I got them all tonight to discuss some great wrestling topics and have some awesome discussions. So let me just get them in here. Let me introduce first. Actually, he's one of my co-hosts over on the Pop Feed on Pop Goes the Classics, our Disney series, as well as many shows on the North-South Connection podcast feed that started up recently within the last few months. He hosts Carolina Dreamin', Fighting Spirit, and co-hosts Wrestling Warzone with JT Rosero, Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you tonight?
Doing good, and I can attest from seeing the receding hairline of one of our other panelists that it is old school, both in PTB seniorship and also in age as well.
Well, I'm not going to have you admit which one, but we'll leave it there for now.
It's me.
Also joining us tonight, he is the co-host of the wrestling game show you can hear right here on the Place Nation Wrestling Feed, Body Pressure Luck, Mr. Jordan Duncan. Jordan, how are you tonight?
Suddenly very self-conscious about my physical appearance. Thanks, Chad. other than that, I'm doing okay. Ready to talk some wrestling with so what would this be? Could we call this the North, South, East, Midwest connection?
Hey, you never know.
Maybe.
That kind of checks out, actually.
Yeah. It's close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know your geography. Also, joining us.
Something.
Yeah, well, they're also joining us tonight. He is a co-host on the Main Event, as well as the International House of Combat. He co-hosts with Kelly Nelson, Mr. Steve Willie. Steve, how are you tonight?
I am good. I am keeping up with a Place to Be Nation tradition of drinking and getting high on a podcast. So I am have a mix of Barry Propel and Drano that I'm trying to clean up my system with right now.
I have odd lights on in my house too.
Yeah, I heard that's the healthy choice these days.
Yeah. Well, it depends on who you listen to. All right, so we're here. We got some great wrestling topics. I'm going to throw out at these gentlemen for them to discuss and their vast wrestling knowledge expertise to give some great commentary. So we're going to go back to the past a little bit to start off. Although there could be some current guys, who knows? But we're going to start with a question. Who did the WWE really miss the boat on and didn't use correctly or know really what to do with? They could be past, present, and how would you have booked them differently so they would have been a bigger success or a bigger deal. Chad, we're going to start with you. Who do you think they really missed the boat on?
So I've been watching a lot of Jim Crockett lately for the GWCW, and the first person that came to mind was Barry Windham. He comes into the WWF in 1989. He's still in his physical prime. You know, he was just really developing, I think, a really cool character in Crockett, more of a persona with the black glove and his heel persona with the horseman. And to me, he just seems very poised to be, to begin with, a top heel against either Hogan or against Warrior, if you want to go that route. And I have enough confidence in his ability and size and everything else that he could have been presented as that top heel. And kind of a combination of everything. I know the counterfeiting scandal with his father didn't help matters, but it just seemed like he never really got off the ground at all with WWF. And I feel like he's kind of the one person that, you know, with some of these guys, it's like, well, yeah, they definitely could have done a lot more with them, but I think it's sometimes either a combination of they're not in their physical prime or, you know, their size. Size is always generally going to be an issue for WWF, WWE until very recently, so that was always holding some people back as well. But, I mean, Barry Windham, to me, checks all the boxes. And just, I mean, I don't even know if he was ever even in a meaningful match in WWF, so... he really feels like someone that never made a pay-per-view appearance. So just someone that came in and then was out just as quickly, but really could have been, I think, a main event star in the 90s, at least until he blew out his knee in 1993.
So that was the Widowmaker?
Yes, the Widowmaker.
Which I still think is one of the greatest wrestling nicknames. I always love that. I always name my fantasy teams those. because he was supposed to be, wasn't he supposed to be in the Survivor Series? And got replaced last minute.
Yeah, he was on the promos for that show leading up to it, and the local promos on like Superstars and Challenge, and then yeah, was gone, and then was back into WCW by mid 90.
Wow. Yeah, and then he came back again, right, as the Stalker character.
Yeah, he does come back as the Stalker. It's like 1996. Now that is. That is the case of somebody that was clearly past their prime, and think there's not much they probably could have done with it. I mean, you know, WCW still did better with him in 1999 when he was with the West Texas Rednecks, but I don't hold that as much against WWF. But from 1990 to 1993, I really think he's probably one of the 10 best U.S. wrestlers that are going, maybe. I mean, maybe top five even. I mean, he is cream of the crop, and it's just disappointing. I mean, you just look at the matchups he could have had. I mean, him versus 1993 Brett, I think, would have been excellent. Ooh. And it's kind of like a dream match.
Do you think maybe he suffered a little too much from the Southern feel that seems like Vince sometimes like held against guys?
Yeah, I think that, but maybe
like the cowboy boots and stuff, you know.
Yeah, he does have a little cowboyish, but I think you could have maybe dressed that up, like, and sort of put like a JBL shine on it. But I'm thinking back in that time, like City Slickers just came out, right?
Yeah. So
you could have put him. I picture him with like a heel manager, you know, maybe. If you want to give Jimmy Hart some more credibility, I mean, I think Bobby would have been, you know, that would have been the way to go. Have Bobby as his mouthpiece, you know, he's bringing him to the city, you know, this rough Texan or whatever that's coming in, and he means business. And I think that really would have worked. And we'd seen that work before with like Stan Hansen back in the 80s with his programs. So, you know, maybe they could have captured that again.
All right. Sure. Jordan, what's your pick?
So I tried to think and be specific in picking one that I didn't think Steve or Chad would pick. Now, Chad's pick was a good one. And he said, you know, during that time period, maybe top 5, 10 North American wrestlers in the world. My pick was certainly not one of the top 5 or 10 in the world at the time. But I kind of went with a different idea. I like how Chad kind of laid out Wyndham as, you know, they just kind of dropped the ball from the start. I went with a guy who it seemed like caught on fire, but kind of hit that WWE wall of like, oh, we don't want you to be on fire right now. And it kind of railroaded him. I picked Ryback. And I'm not even a big fan of Ryback. I don't hate him necessarily or anything. But if you look at Ryback in 2012, here's a guy who got really, really good reactions and got really popular to the point where I don't think they expected him to be as popular as he was. And the way he was kind of booked near the end there, just he was the guy in the match against Punk when Brad Maddox debuted as the referee. He was involved in some of the Shield stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think Ryback is a guy that, looking back, and I think Braun Strowman kind of similar, is a guy that was they kind of had lightning in a bottle, maybe not long term. You know, he's not even around anymore, and he wasn't really a great worker necessarily. But sometimes you just strike while the iron's hot, and I think the iron was hot for him, and they held back because they had other plans. And sometimes I think you just got to pull the trigger, and I think that's a good example in terms of what I was thinking of, dropped ball. I specifically think, you know, there's a couple opportunities where they kind of could have pulled the trigger and had him jump over the hump of kind of where he was. They could have had him beat Punk for the title. I know that sounds crazy, but I think fans at the time actually would have accepted it. 8 years down the road, where we are now, would we have? I don't know, but that doesn't really matter in the moment. And then I think it was the Royal Rumble that year where he was the final two with Cena and they had Cena win it. They could have had him win by eliminating Cena, which could have been a big deal. There's just a lot of times where they put him in a spot to be a big deal, and then they just got cold feet and pulled back. And I think that almost makes it worse for a guy when you present him as a guy that could do something big, and then it gets fans thinking that he might, and then they pull the rug out from under him. I think that kills their momentum more so than even if he was never in that spot to begin with. So I was thinking Ryback because I honestly don't think he's a terrible, terrible wrestler. I think he's good enough to get by and a little hot streak. Obviously, there's the Goldberg comparisons and things like that. I think Goldberg's better, more charismatic and stuff. But I think if you just said, you know what, let's just ride this wave, see where it goes, maybe put the title on him, maybe have him surprise Cena for the win, put him in the second title match at Mania. I don't know what they could have done, but I think that he's a good example of a guy that they had a chance to do something with that they weren't prepared for, and since they weren't prepared, they didn't do it, and now we'll never know how long that would have lasted or how far he would have gone. So that's why I went with his Ryback.
Yeah, I think he was good. He got better in the ring, I think.
He did. The funny thing is, when he was at his most popular was probably when he was worst in the ring.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, he did, because he did start adding stuff more towards the end of his run, like other moves and stuff. You know, he's a guy that, had they given the Money in the Bank, and you know, as a face, and you hear that, you know, some heel down, like just say he's like in a spot like Dolph was in, like, and Del Rio's down, and all of a sudden you hear, I mean, that place exploded for Dolph. I mean, if they heard "Feed Me More," that it would have been bananas. I mean, and if he doesn't work, you know what? There's a pay-per-view every month, or you could just do something on Raw, or so, you know, you could always pull the belt off him. That's why I think they're so afraid of things. You know, you want guys to have long runs, but you know, give somebody a shot. You never know what you have. Guys can get over without you.
And I think his biggest fault in that time is not even his own fault. It's that he got hot with the crowd at a time when they already had kind of their Mania matches lined up. Mm-hmm. And so they weren't going to deviate. You know, it was like Survivor Series, and I don't remember what the December pay-per-view was then. Was it Hell in the Cell back then? I don't remember. But
TLC.
TLC, yeah. So, I mean, by then they probably already had Mania in mind, so they're not going to switch their big matches, be like, well, Ryback's hot right now. Let's run with Ryback. I mean, that WrestleMania, he ended up losing to Mark Henry. So obviously they didn't really see a future in him. But I just think he's a good example of, just because they didn't see something in him, the fans were reacting like they did, and we'll never know who was right. And I tend to think you at least let the fans taste what they say looks appetizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's, I mean, what you're saying is true. I mean, I think they definitely knew it was going to be Rock versus Cena. They wanted Punk to have the long title reign and lose to Rock. And that's all well and good. But then you get into the problem where, like, for that Hell in a Cell match that he has with Punk, which I was there live, by the way, that was in Atlanta. That's the last pay-per-view non-PTB I've ever been to. And the crowd was 100% wanting Ryback to win that match, like clamoring for it. And, you know, you're the one that booked that. Like, I can't give you that excuse because you're the one that boxed yourself into that. So I see no reason why they could have went to Rock Cena some other way and had Ryback win the Royal Rumble. I think that'd have been great because, you know, I mean, Jack Swagger challenged for the world title at that WrestleMania 29.
Wow.
Ryback certainly could have been in that position versus Del Rio. So it was,
And having just take Del Rio's head off, I mean, that would have been way better, you know?
Yeah. So tons of missed opportunities there, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Good one. Steve, what's your pick? Did we lose Steve?
This one was an immediate pick for me, and I'm glad neither of you picked this one as well. And Oxl could be used for a question later on that we're going to tackle, but that's Diamond Dallas Page.
Mm. Yeah, I thought of him.
Yeah, like easily to me the biggest disappointment in the transition to WWF, because he was one of the few guys who actually accepted the buyout, one of the few star names from WCW that just didn't stay on the sidelines and collect their paycheck. Like, no fault of towards them. I probably would have done the same thing and collected my million to sit at home and eat and watch Supermarket Sweep. So, but like, he came in as a quote-unquote shock, as, you know, the Undertaker's wife's stalker, which was completely against anything that his character has ever done. So that was, it just seemed to me like it was one of those, we didn't make you, we had nothing to do with you, so we were going to bring you to the bottom and build you up our own way. The problem with that is that he kept his name, he kept, you know, looked the same. Yeah. He was already incredibly popular, one of the few bright spots in the last couple of years of WCW when he was healthy, the feud with the Fat Chick Thrilla notwithstanding, and basically was done within a couple months. You know, he had the little mini feud with the Undertaker that really didn't go anywhere and was blown off with, was it like that really bad cage match?
Yeah. Didn't his wife pin him too once? Sarah got a pinfall over him.
Yeah. And then he was, for a while, like the Positively Page character, brought that back, but it was pretty creepy. The only championship that he won was the tag belt, but that was just for a hot minute, and the European belt. And he was in and out in about a year because he got injured. So you have one of the bigger stars in WCW coming over. You could have all sorts of, you know, kind of dreamish matches before he gets too old and needs to leave, but they just kind of put him right to the bottom. And that very much a microcosm of the you know, the alliance and the angle between WCW, eventually ECW, and WWF.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No point.
I think too, like, go in with the fact that he debuted in the invasion angle. What a perfect character for the invasion. A guy who's part of his gimmick is that his killer move can be hit at any time from any place. How awesome would it be if, like, for the first 2 months he was just jumping in, hitting diamond cutters, leaving. Boom. That's all he does, you know, for the night, for 8 weeks in a row. Just hits people with diamond cutters. You never know what's coming. Kind of like Sting in 97, but instead of a baseball bat, it's a diamond cutters coming on somebody. That'd be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you could do it against heels. I mean, they brought in, for the Alliance, they brought in guys, you know, a lot of them, they brought in heel. But, I mean, people don't want to see him as a heel. They want to do that. That's why Randy Orton still gets cheered, whether he's a face or a heel, because partially because of that move, that you can do it from so many different ways. It's like, I don't know. It always felt, we can talk more about this later, but one of the reasons that wrestling got so for me during this time.
All right. Any other names? Like, I was thinking like Luger. I mean, I know he's not the greatest between the ropes, but I mean, he was, you know, a big deal over there, and he comes in as the narcissist. I think it's a terrible name. Put him with Bobby was a good idea, but it was just, and then I just think they never reached their full potential with him at all. I mean, he was okay. He could have been a much bigger deal. Any other names that you guys had on your list?
I wrote a couple other ones down because I didn't know how many we'd discuss. The next one I had is one that we've kind of seen evidence that they dropped the ball, and that's Cody Rhodes. And, you know, from Stardust to what he's become since leaving the WWE, I think is just all the proof that you need is seeing the success he's had on his own in Ring of Honor, in New Japan, with AEW, seeing the mind he has for the business. And again, sort of like Ryback, I don't think of Cody as like a top-tier stellar worker, but man, as a guy who says I don't really like his matches, I like his AEW matches, you know? And the comparison is that when he was in WWE, now, again, he's calling the shots in AEW. He's the boss. He probably has more say than anybody. He's not going to be like that in WWE, but he was Stardust, you know, like you can't get a more opposite than where he is compared to where he was. So I thought Cody was a good example as well.
Yeah. Chad, Steve, you guys got any others you have jotted down?
I went with Kenny Omega. That was going to be kind of my second one just because he was in developmental. They had him, and just between his experience with the whole process down in Deep South, he, you know, got out about as quickly as he could. And I mean, I don't foresee, I mean, never say never, but I think at this point in time, I don't foresee him entering WWE. And he's someone that certainly has had a flourishing career here and in Japan.
So the same thing about AJ. So that's why never say never is one of the truest phrases.
Sure.
Steve.
All right. I got a deep, deep cut that just popped in my head. The alpha male, Monty Brown, Marquise, what was he in?
Marquise
Corbin or something?
Yeah. Marcus Corbin.
Marcus Corbin, yeah.
A guy that had just ridiculous off-the-chart charisma, had a great finishing move. It was one of the bright spots in TNA for the brief time that he was there. And then he was starting to get a bit over in the ECW on Sci-Fi era. And just kind of trickled away as ECW kind of died itself.
Yeah.
I know he left for a little bit, but then he was cut as well. And just again, we're starting to see him on our TNA rewatch on Main Event, and still one of the more exciting parts of the show. The couple of times he's been on, exactly. A great move that people like Lance Hoyt uses it now, or Lance Archer, whatever his name is, but not to as cool of an extent as Monty Brown did.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, the current guys, I mean, I'm looking at Robert Roode, or Bobby Roode, however, whatever you want to call him. I mean, this guy should be close to your world title picture, you know, but now he's floundering as a comedy act. I know it's a strange situation right now, but you know, before that, you know, putting him and Dolph together, I was never a fan of that because his run in NXT was really good. And another guy that comes up to the main roster, and it's like, you know, once Vince is calling the shots and not Hunter, you know, they don't know what to do with them.
Sure.
All right. So moving on to the other company that was briefly mentioned, AEW. We're going to play Booker or, you know, Money Man, Tony Khan, whatever you want to call it. So I'm going to ask the gentleman, if they were AEW, what would your wish list of wrestlers be that are currently under contract with other companies? Three pie in the sky and three realistic. Now, a little caveat, this was written, this format was written before the recent group of releases by WWE, so those guys can be included as, quote unquote, under contract, because that's when it was written. So we're going to start with Jordan this time. Jordan, let's start with the pie in the sky, and then we'll go around the horn again when we do the realistic. If
sure.
No object contracts, who are three guys under contract with other organizations that AEW should be at the top of their wish list?
So I went with just WWE guys, thinking that. And also, too, I'll say with my pie in the sky versus realistic. I don't even know if my realistic are realistic because I don't know contract structures. I don't read rumors, know who's happy, who's not. But my pie in the sky guys, I thought, okay, so what would be the best for them business-wise? Not necessarily who's going to have the best matches, things like that. Like what would hurt WWE the most? And so the first one I said is Triple H. And that's definitely pie in the sky. But, you know, you take away the face of NXT, the internet darling, the you know, the internet thing is if it's good, it's from Triple H. If it's bad, it's from Vince. You take that away from WWE, you know, you're left with Vince. We'll see if really it is Triple H. It's good. He could still have matches. I'm sure he would get in there and work with some of those guys. And it's certainly pie in the sky. He ain't going to be jumping anytime soon. Mm-hmm. But that's the first one I thought of, like, okay, what would never happen but would be a big deal? And if Triple H left the WWE, that would be about as big a deal as if anybody but a McMahon, you know? So that's the first one I did. Should I do all three of mine, or we want to do one at a time? How you want to do it, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, if it flows better, we want to go around the horn maybe because other people may, you know, have other ones, so we'll maybe jump in. So we'll go Steve. What's one of your pie-in-the-sky picks?
One of my pie-in-the-sky picks. Who I just lost what I was looking at, would be Kevin Owens.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he's going to be someone who goes anywhere. I think he'll be happy to just retire. I know he's someone who, you know, is making money for his family, but I think under the having the creative freedom to, you know, do his own promos, to, you know, have a say in booking their own angles, plus his history with the Bucks, I think that can make for some pretty solid entertainment. Not even necessarily matches. I think he can have great matches too, but I think he would really fit in with some of the other stuff that they're trying to do with, you know, backstage stuff or thinking outside, you know, of the box. I think it would probably do well in WWE doing that too, and we'll see if they use him in that regard. He's one of the standouts in the most recent WrestleMania, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I think he might be enjoyable over there.
Yeah. All right. Chad, what's one of your pie in the sky guys or picks?
Certainly not Triple H, I can tell you that. I did go with John Cena, though. And I know that's a very pie in the sky, but somebody that I think, you know, biggest wrestling star of the past 20 years and, you know, never say never. And somebody I think would be good to use on the microphone. And I mean, Jericho's actually wrestled more than I thought he would, but he kind of could have that role I thought Jericho would have where he's maybe around a decent amount, but kind of comes in and out for different programs and is there for the big, big shows and the big attraction. I mean, certainly, if they could swing it, that would be a great boost just for their notoriety to have somebody like John Cena in there.
That would be something. Would that be equivalent to Hogan jumping to WCW back in the day? Or,
well, that's why I was thinking. I mean, obviously, like, it's a pie in the sky for the concept of this question. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you think about, like, 1993 WCW, which is 1 year before Hogan was there. You know, Smoky Mountain Wrestling outdrew WCW in a lot of venues in 1993. So, you know, Hogan was there 1 year later. So they, you know, never say never.
All right. Jordan, what's your second pie in the sky pick?
So my second pie in the sky pick, again, I was kind of approaching it from the aspect of sort of what would be the biggest blow to the competition.
Vince McMahon. Save Vince McMahon.
I went with Stephanie McMahon. No.
God.
But I thought, well, he did appear in that
pay-per-view match. Win. Yeah, yes. Pay-per-view.
Undefeated in pay-per-view. But I thought one of AEW's biggest weak points is their women's division. So I thought, you know, why not pluck the most heralded one from WWE? And I thought about Becky, but I actually went with Charlotte because I think that WWE kind of prefers Charlotte to be their face of the division, and I think Charlotte leaving, because then you've got the Flair connection, you've got the Rhodes, you've got Flairs, you've got Andersons, you've got Blanchards, you've got all kinds of names going into AEW. Again, pie in the sky, because I don't think she's going anywhere, and I don't know that Charlotte's arrival would suddenly make that women's division compelling. But I do think it would force WWE to scramble, because it seems like they always kind of fall back on. And now Charlotte's in a main event program for the title. And so if you kind of take their fallbacks away from them, I think that would be kind of a double-edged sword in terms of helping AEW as well as hurting the competition.
Yeah. Wow, that was a good one. Steve, what about you? What's your second one?
King? No, not the king. Let me see. Okay, I'm gonna go a little outside the box on this. I think this is a pie in the sky one, but I'll say Sasha Banks. I was gonna say Charlotte, but I'm trying to think of something that would be a huge shock. And again, like, they have a couple, I'm gonna say like three or four decent women who have a really good chance, and then it's hard to grade these days with, you know, they're just kind of pulling people from whoever is local for some of these shows, both WWE and AEW. But Sasha Banks is someone who, like, starts up, she'll get hot, and then taken away again. Like, someone who... Charlotte would be huge, but I think Sasha is a little bit more beloved. So I just think that she might be a really fun person to show up.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. I think Sasha's more beloved by the fan community, whereas Charlotte's more beloved within the WWE itself.
Yeah, good pick. Chad, what's your second pie in the sky?
My second one, I did go international, and I picked Kazuchika Okada.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, someone still in his physical prime and been the ace of New Japan, helped build business there. So proven draw, and I would just hope that he wouldn't get Nakamura'd if he came to AEW. But and actually, I mean, I would think, you know, like John Cena, I'd probably honestly give, like, I don't know, 5% chance of him going to AEW. I actually think the chances of Okada jumping might be a little bit stronger than you might think. Like, not likely by any means, but I'd probably handicap that in like the 15 to 20% range. He's somebody that had sent out feelers before. You know, whether he's used that for contract negotiations or not, but It's something that, you know, has kind of been around. He's somebody that really embraces the Western culture and seems to enjoy it, and had a bad taste in his mouth from his treatment in TNA, but is someone that looks like he would, you know, not have a problem adapting to living over here if he chose that path. So I'll pick him.
All right, cool. Jordan, what's your final pie in the sky?
So I actually came up with about five just on the off chance that people said other ones. And Okada is one that was on my pie in the sky. So let me cross him off. And my last one, I just went with, okay, who would I like to see in terms of dream matches, looking at their roster? Who do I want? And I just went with my favorite wrestler. And I said Daniel Bryan, you know. Just it's not going to happen, but I just think all the dream matches are there. I think he would fit in perfectly with so many of those guys. I think it'd be fun to see him in a Bucks 8-man tag match and just going wild with those spots. I think we'd see the real creative side of him. I think he could also do some of those wrestling clinics that we see sometimes. He could come in and be plugged right into the main event. He could come in and be plugged right into a mid-card feud with a guy like Omega or somebody else. He could be a face. He could be a heel. He could be anything. And I'd just love to see him against pretty much anybody in the roster right now. So I just went with personal choice of who I'd like to see, and that's Daniel Bryan.
All right, cool. Steve, what about you? Pie in the sky, final pick.
Oh, man, this is tough because some good ones have been taken. In my view, I'm kind of perusing the WWE roster, and it's like, oh, there's really not many pie in the sky type people that I'd even care to see go over there. So, oh my God, this is the easiest one ever. Kota Ibushi from New Japan. You know, there's even been a couple teases of him since AEW started. He has obviously the huge history with Kenny. You can go as the team. You can go as one-on-one. That's someone who you could have a ton of dream matches like too. man, I think it was just New Japan being gone for so long the last couple of months, and I'm forgetting most of the roster because I was trying to go through like, oh, well, there's Naito too. I don't know. But yeah, Kota Ibushi would be an easy one for me.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's my only question to that one would be, not giving away my next list, but is he pie in the sky? Or do we think there's a chance? Because I might have him on my other list of I think it could happen one day.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the fact
not
that
they're – not necessarily, like, leaving New Japan.
Yeah.
But I could see him being in an AEW match.
But he pretty much had the chance to, and he decided to stay.
That's true.
All right. Chad, what's your final pie in the sky?
Yeah, I was going to try to sneak in Daniel Bryan into my realistic, but I won't cheat now. But for my last one, I wanted to think of someone that I thought is currently under WWE contract, but is not doing a whole lot, in my opinion, or could be doing a lot more. And honestly, I thought there was a bevy of options there between Sami Zayn and Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate and even, Keith Lee or Matt Riddle. But when it came down to who I thought was still in their most physical peak and who I also thought could be a main event player in AEW, I went with Walter.
I knew you were coming there.
I think he has the size, the stoicism, and a ton of matches on the table that feel fresh versus the AEW talent. So, I mean, him is kind of your reigning foreign heel versus Cody or a dream match versus Omega. There's just a ton of avenues to go with Walter. So that's my third pick.
All right.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah,
he's so much bigger than the AEW roster, too.
Oh, yeah. I picture him as like their Vader, like circa 1993. Yeah.
No selling a double Bucks super kick. How awesome would that be?
Just have him squash Jake Hager, whatever his name is now.
Squash him. But Daniel Bryan was going to be one of your, regular realist, and Walter was going to be pie in the sky.
Well, I just think there's.
I mean, less, and the rating wars. NXT's going to have to be canceled.
Well, I think, Daniel Bryan's contract's up. That's why I was going to try to slide him in with the realistic. But yeah.
All right. So let's go to realistic, speaking of that. And we'll go back to Jordan to start us off with who are the guys that you think they could get?
So, yeah, full disclosure, you sent this these questions several weeks ago so we could kind of study. And when I saw this question, the first ones that came to mind are guys who have now been released, The Revival and Rusev. I guess they don't count now.
Counts.
Okay. I'll lump them together. Yeah. but I think the writing's been on the wall for The Revival, especially. Rusev is kind of like, almost seems like he's trolling people and feeding into rumors and stuff you never really knew. Like, even the day when all those releases were coming, he tweeted, he's like, Rusev out! And I was like, he ain't gone, because that's what he did. But if I'm going to have to pick one, I'll say Rusev, just because I think we already knew Revival was kind of headed there. But I think Rusev would really benefit from it. Here's a guy who – talk about someone that could have been our last question, the WWE dropped the ball with Rusev Day and stuff. I think there's a guy who's just really creative and clever, and he's a big guy, which is something AEW doesn't have a lot of. Like we just said, Walter would be like their Vader. Rusev isn't quite as big as Walter, but he's big enough to where he'd be imposing against all those guys. And I think he'd really rejuvenate himself. And they'd also let him lean into the comedy. He's just a naturally funny person, too, to the point where I don't think he would be overly comedy, like all shtick. But he's a witty person. He's got some sarcasm and things like that I think translates well with him. So I think Rusev would be a really good choice.
Now, when you talk about Rusev, I mean, I know he was in a contract negotiations for a while. He's a guy that I think we're going to see him go the Drew McIntyre, whatever. He's going to go away for a while, and he's just going to get himself over and become way bigger than he ever was, even with Rusev Day. And he's going to come back for a big payday, hopefully, and just be a big star a few years from now. That's my hope. Because I find the guy very entertaining. I think he's great in a ring. And I do hope. I mean, I think this could be the best thing for him, to especially getting away from that shit angle they had him in with his wife.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, who's your first realistic pick?
Going down the list of people here again. So I'm going to do I'll do this one first because I don't think anyone's going to take my other one. Someone who has been around in the WWE forever and really has not gotten above a certain point and probably is one of the best wrestlers in the world still, and that's Cesaro.
Oh, yeah.
Who could never been able to rise above like the U.S. championship level. It felt like they were going to do something with him when he joined up with Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar, and that kind of slipped away for a little bit. Like, oh, are they going to turn, you know, someone and do Brock versus Cesaro, which I think would be a very intriguing match if you had Cesaro pushed. And he could be an easy top contender for your heavyweight belt in AEW. He would tower over a lot of the people there. Outside of, you know, someone like a Jake Hager or a Lance Archer, but I also think he's way better than both of those guys combined. And it would give him the one final chance in his career, because I don't know how old he is, but he's been around forever.
74.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to...
Oh, he doesn't look a day over 72.
Yeah. And just an immediate, a great look, still absolutely jacked. Mm-hmm. Can still move, can do pretty much anything. I think he'd fit right into the presentation style of AEW. And the feeling that, you know, for most people, that really the only thing that's held him back is that he's got an accent. And, you know, like that's really about it. Mm-hmm. Like they haven't done much with him character-wise. But and there were some times, like even back when Main Event was a thing and, you know, had actual decent matches on it, he was on there every single week and getting good matches out of everybody. That was during that U.S. title run, and very under the radar stuff. That was just top notch because they let him go like 15 minutes with everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. He is one, you know, bell to bell, he is one of the best workers they have and still over too. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, he goes to hit the swing or, you know, sets up for the neutralizer. What is that? I forgot his finish here. Yeah, where he does the neck crack. I mean, it's still over. It's amazing why this guy has never had a world title run, at least. Mm-hmm. You know, so Chad, what's one of your realistic picks?
This is one of the guys that was released, but, he's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I think he's... would be a value add, and it's Chris Hero. I think just get him in there.
That'd be good.
If you only want him to be a mentor and coach, that's one thing, but he has history with the Bucks, worked a lot of PWG stuff, so should have an open arrangement, and I'd be surprised if they don't at least get him in as a, agent or whatever role. I think it'd be very dumb and short-sighted to not have him.
Yeah. All right, good pick. Jordan, what's your next realistic?
Yeah, why not just do Hero and Cesaro? Just bring back the Kings. I mean, right. Kind of cool. Just to add to the Cesaro thing, by the way, too. Not only is he like consistently called one of the best in the world, when I think of AEW, like I think their strong point is those wild 6 to 8 man tag matches, and I think Cesaro might be the best in the world at just the heavy base in those matches. Mm-hmm. You know, just have him just launching people over ropes and stuff. That'd be, anyways.
Some of his stuff in Chikara. Oh, like yeah. when it was just him and all these like tiny guys,
like crawling on him, climbing on him, you know, it's awesome. So here's what I went with, and I don't know if this counts as realistic or not, but the reason I put him on the realistic side is more because before he came back to WWE, there was questions of if he would go to AEW, and I picked Rey Mysterio. And I don't know if that qualifies as realistic or not, but there was rumors about it, so. It does for me. I think Ray would really enjoy working there. I think he would like to have a lot of fresh matchups. We've seen in his stuff that somehow this guy doesn't age. I mean, there was a stretch a few years back where Ray seemed kind of broken down, but his body seems rejuvenated. He's still a good worker, still solid. He'd come in. I'd love to see Ray do something with like Ray Phoenix, kind of like the old guard versus the new guard. Like, Rey Fénix to me is kind of like the current Rey Mysterio in this terms of, like, he does stuff a little different than what everybody else does. I just think he'd be a real good addition. And again, here's the guy who everybody knows him, and it's a big name that comes to your company too. You know, whereas maybe a knock on like a Rusev or a Revival bringing in is sort of like a cast off. Whereas if it was Rey, that's a big star coming over. And I just think he'd have a lot of really fun matches.
Yeah, I think so. I could definitely – that's not out of the realm of possibility, I think. I think it's whoever agrees to give Dominic a contract, that's where Ray will go.
Yeah.
All right. Steve, what's your second realistic pick?
Okay. My second realistic pick, as I'm stalling for time let's take someone who is not getting, you know, in the doghouse a little bit, thrown on commentary here, there, has probably one last gasp before he's going to have to retire, and that's Samoa Joe. Mm-hmm. Another one who's been tickling the top, gets close and either gets injured or they'll go in a different direction. He had that one of the better matches with Brock Lesnar. And again, someone who could fit in, you know, who has experience working with some of the AEW guys. You can have a, you know, like a Joe Omega match. He could go face or heel. So you could write him in wherever you want. And, you know, another guy who you could put at the top of the card.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's a good pick. Could happen. You never know. Chad, who's your second realistic pick?
I went with probably an obscure name to most of the listening audience, but he's a wrestler for the DDT promotion. He's kind of their ace. He's really young, 24 years old, I think. And with their relation with DDT in Japan, letting Omega work there, and some of the Tokyo Joshi Pro wrestlers they've had over, I think it's a possibility. And that was Konosuke Takeshita, who's a... You know, my second pie in the sky pick was Okada, and Takeshita is sort of Okada light, and I think that's a little bit of an insult to Takeshita because he's a great wrestler, but I think he was certainly someone that you could come over, be like a special attraction match. I don't think you'd want to present it very highly, and I don't necessarily know how his personality would play over. He kind of is doing a strongman type personality gimmick in DDT currently, but I think he's definitely somebody you could do for like a showcase type match. And if it got over as well as I think it could, if given time to develop, then you could continue to bring him over for some one shots or a mini program here and there.
All right. Well, the beauty of podcasts is they're recorded, so when this guy shows up at AEW, we can always say Chad called it. So you never know. It could happen. So, Jordan, who's your final realistic pick?
So I have one that I listed as realistic, but it's not realistic at all. But I just thought, you know, if the person you're dating is in one company, maybe you might want to switch up your locale just to be with your dentist girlfriend. I thought maybe Adam Cole, but I don't think that's actually realistic. So I actually went with Ring of Honor guy, Bandido. I think didn't he work one of the AEW shows? Was he on?
He was on All In.
Yeah. All In or All Out? Which one? One of the two.
The original. Yes.
Yeah, so he's been there before. He re-signed with Ring of Honor not that long ago, but there was some rumors about even WWE had some rumored interest in him. And he's just a guy that fits the AEW kind of what you think of when you think of AEW wrestling. He can fly, he can run. I think he's pretty good. I've never heard him talk. I don't think he does. Well, I'm sure he talks, but you know what I mean. But that's a guy that I think realistically we could see down the line. You know, Ring of Honor kind of signed up some guys, but just given where Ring of Honor is going, I don't know that signing guys to locked up contracts is going to be a thing in the future for Ring of Honor. We don't really know. Is he the PWG champion still, Bandido? I don't know, but that could be an obstacle. But I just don't think that door's closed. I think it's very much an option to have a guy like that come in, and I think he's pretty exciting to watch, and I think he'd fit right in and get over pretty quick.
All right. Steve, who's your final pick?
I'll go to Ring of Honor as well, and I will pick one of my favorite guys from like 2016-ish, 2017-ish, and he's struggled the last year or so, but he would be great in all sorts of vignettes, and that's Dalton Castle.
Mm.
He's, you know, had, I haven't really watched Ring of Honor the last 6 months, 9 months, but, and I know he had been injured quite a bit after his world title run. So he was pretty limited for what he could do for a while, but has a great amateur style that doesn't get used very much. Great comedy. His stuff, like if you go on his Twitter and see some of the, like just the fun Ring of Honor interviews he does with Joe Hendry, some of the character work is, it's just hysterical. And so I think another guy who, you know, he wouldn't be a top guy, but could fit in that low card to mid card, you know, people who might be main eventing dark or showing up in the, you know, in a tag match or singles match to, you know, get a couple wins, put other people over, and it would just be fun. Wouldn't have to be a dark order, dark, what are all the Nightmare Collective.
Yeah, everybody's like evil monsters, Jake Roberts group.
Yeah, a little more lighthearted.
All right, that sounds like a lot of fun. Chad, who's your final realistic pick?
I want to give an honorable mention to Zack Ryder real quick. I think he'll also be signed, and I think he could do some interesting stuff. But my third pick, and you mentioned Andy, when this guy shows up, you can say I called it. And Takeshita, I think, is maybe a little bit of a long shot, but more realistic than my pie in the sky. But this guy, I give over 50% chance of showing up at AEW at some point. He's young. He's 23 years old. I looked it up. He's a AAA luchador. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you just YouTube some of his highlights, he has some of the most dazzling high spots, really, probably you've ever seen. And it's El Hijo del Vikingo, Viking. And I know I butchered that, but he's somebody that I think could be a great breakout star in that Rey Mysterio coming on the scene in 1995, 1996, that type of vein. Just spectacular high spots, and somebody that I think will be a main eventer in AAA in the next 5 years, and honestly could be a main player in AEW if they went ahead and locked him up.
All right, cool. All right. Well, that's some homework for the listeners. Go on YouTube and look up these fine gentlemen that Chad has recommended. So that's great stuff, guys. Hopefully we see some of that stuff because, you know, I really – not saying we'll ever see like something like with the Monday Night Wars, but I'd love to see some guys going both ways, actually. You know, that adds more excitement, and it makes them, you know, the promoters and the writers up their games, and we're really the ones that will benefit from that. So,
great.
We like to do a little, always have a question here about moves, because, you know, we're all wrestling fans. We've all had our favorite moves and variations of some moves. So tonight we're going to talk about a simple ish kind of move, but you know, there are different variations, and well, if it's well executed, it's a you know, a fun move to get the crowd to pop. We're going to talk about the power slam. So we're going to start with Steve. So we're going to say who has the best power slam, and also what is your favorite variation of the move, because there are different, like most things, like the DDT we've talked about before, we've talked about the dropkick, you know, there are different variations. Which one's your favorite? So that's your part B of the question.
I've been going back and forth between the best power slam, and I'm still changing my mind as I'm going to say this. I'll go with one of my old favorite guys to use in a video game, Dr. Death Steve Williams. When he would hit it, when he would hit it properly and like run and ram the guy into the corner and then turn back around and slam the guy, it was a really cool finishing move. And like one of two guys who's probably best known for the power slam during that time. My favorite variation of the move has probably changed in the last couple of years when Dustin Rhodes really pops his hips and turns the guy around like rapidly. Like it just looks so devastating. I know Cody kind of copies it now, but I still think Dustin's is way better. It looks just like slicker. He could do it to guys who are bigger, unlike Cody, and Cody can be kind of sloppy with it too. Mm-hmm. So that's my favorite right now is Dustin's quick kind of real low, pop the hips over and slam the guy down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of fun. Chad, who do you think has the best power slam, and what's your favorite variation?
I went pretty simply with Lex Luger. Mm-hmm. Been watching him a lot lately, and it's kind of on my mind. I think he has good rhythm with his power slam, so I've always enjoyed the fluidity, and he seems to throw the guys over. For favorite variation, Steve kind of took my guy, as I was going to go with Dr. Death and his Oklahoma Stampede variation. I think that's a very cool move to use. He kind of could use it as a finisher versus lesser opponents, and also as a setup move when he was in the main event matches. So that's my current favorite variation of the power slam there.
All right. Jordan, what about you? What's your who has the best power slam and your favorite variation?
Dustin Rhodes is on my list as well. Something about just the quickness that he does it, because like Steve said, Cody does it. I think Randy Orton uses it as well, but yeah, something about the speed that Dustin is able to pull it off with, it makes it really look like it could be a finisher. So, yeah, we've already talked about that one. One kind of an older one, Buzz Sawyer had a really good power slam. It's sort of like the Dustin one where he would catch him off the ropes, but he would take him up higher a little bit. But I think Dustin is probably my favorite variation, and I think he's the best at it. So I'd say Dustin for both answers.
All right, cool. We'll go around with some other honorable mentions. But for me, I actually kind of loved, John Tenta as Earthquake. His power slam, I always thought, as the setup move for the whatever it's called, the sit down splash, I think it's called. I always thought the so methodical, like he just would pick the guy up and slowly, like kind of lumber and then wham, throw the guy down. I kind of am a fan of, yeah, you know, not as much as when Goldberg used it, but Keith Lee, you know, using that kind of like that press into the drop into the power slam. I mean, he just gets some serious bounce on that, and it just pops me. So let's kind of go around, though. Some, you know, surprisingly, nobody mentioned Davey Boy Smith. Guys, probably it was one of those like, oh, somebody else will say him kind of things. But Davey Boy, you know, always had a great one. Let's go around. Steve, you have any other honorable mentions in either part of the question?
Bulldog. Mm-hmm. He got sloppier later on in his career, but earlier on in his career in the late 80s, mid-80s, late 80s, he looked really good. He put a lot of speed on it and as he was running. You know, very similar to Dr. Death Steve Williams, but Dr. Death had a lot more oomph on it.
Yeah. All right. Chad, you have any honorable mentions?
Randy Orton was my second name on the list. But just as kind of a dark horse, somebody that didn't do a power slam a whole lot, but sometimes would do it as transitional moves and also got a lot of pop on it, was Bobby Eaton every once in a while in the Midnight Express tag matches. You can see him doing a very good power slam, and that would create the face and peril section of the match.
Yeah, all right. Jordan?
I think mine would probably be, I'm drawing a blank here. Someone we discussed. I don't know. I got a brain fart. I'll say the Bulldog.
That's all right. It happens. Yeah.
I was sitting there thinking, like, have I seen a Bobby Eaton power slam? And so my brain's like trying to picture a Bobby Eaton power slam. I totally forgot who was in my head. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Since you mentioned Keith Lee, I had Goldberg kind of listed, but I didn't know if that counted as a power slam.
Sort of
like a suplex into a power slam with a jackhammer.
Well, he had to press, though, right? And he would drop the guy.
Yeah. I mean, Goldberg can make a lot of those moves look pretty intense.
Mm-hmm. All right. Awesome. So our next question, everybody on here is a gamer, plays video games, has grown up playing video games. So we're going to talk about wrestling video games, but kind of like a little spin. What's an old wrestling video game that you grew up playing, whether it's on an older system, it was an arcade game, that you would like to see re-released for iOS or a home gaming system, or even one of those arcade one-up machines that everybody sees that I'm looking at my Street Fighter 2 one in the other room. So, Jordan, we're going to start with you. What's an old wrestling video game that you would love to see make a comeback in a different platform?
Yeah, this is easy for me. No Mercy, Virtual Pro Wrestling 2, the Aki engine from Nintendo 64. That's like peak wrestling game for me. If they just put that on a new system, they can improve the graphics. Even if they don't, I don't really care. That was the most fun I ever had playing a wrestling game. So easy, no-brainer choice for me.
Yeah, that was fun. Also, back then on the 64, there was the WCW one. Was it the Bash?
Same engine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any of those games, you know. But if they just took the engine and just plugged it in again, I'll take it.
Yeah. All right. Steve, what about you?
Absolutely the same choice. If someone could get me a No Mercy N64 game that doesn't reboot itself after playing for a few months, that would be nice, because we got that from the very beginning, the first day it came out. But the hours and hours and hours, we brought it out a couple years ago. My friends and I, who always used to play it together, had like a little reunion, and we did like a 10 against 10 against 10 against 10 gauntlet match. Each person got 10 people. And I eventually won, because after your 10 guys were gone, you know, then you were eliminated. And I think it took 2 hours and 15 minutes nonstop. Yeah, we had like, I'm old, and I can't do that anymore. And, you know, you got the old thumb, the calluses started going again. Mm-hmm. Like the Virtual Pro one, and I still have it too, is just the roster that they have was, like, it was so big. I know that Fire Pro is one I've never really played, and their roster is essentially infinite at this point, but it seems like there's a big learning curve, and apparently expensive if you're getting it over Steam. But that's
a little overwhelming. It's a little intimidating of a game.
Yeah, that would be one that it's so easy to learn too. That was the great thing about it.
Yep.
I might have to break out my 64 now and play on No Mercy.
Yeah.
Chad, what about you?
Yeah, I'm an N64 guy as well. So, No Mercy, WrestleMania 2000, those were definitely the two games that I gave the most play to, and would welcome that type of system back. I will give a little bit of an obscure choice, and this is actually a game that it was coming out or just came out, depending on when this is coming. But Total Extreme Wrestling is coming out with the 2020 version.
Wow.
And I heard it's very buggy. I heard it's very bad so far, based on the people that played the demo. So, but I think if they could make an iOS, I could see me utilizing that. Like something, that's, of course, a very robust system of, you know, database of all the wrestlers and everything else, but maybe if you could hone it down like in app format by saying, like, you know, like you're just gonna be the booker of Crockett from 1985 to 1988, and here's 100 guys you have at your arsenal, you know, and then they could just keep updating it that way. I think that would be very fun. I mean, I can see myself like wasting time, 10 or 15 minutes, just utilizing that and kind of booking a card and utilizing the simulation that way.
Wow. One of my favorite wrestling games now. I love the N64, all of them, even the ones with the whatever the one was, like, I think it was like THQ Wrestling or something, like with like the first wrestling game where it was like Powder Keg was the name of one of the wrestlers and stuff like that. Those were all fun. But WrestleFest, the arcade game, the four player, I love that. That was college for me. I mean, playing that in the commons, you know, and learning the little, you know, the tricks. Like everybody just tried to beat the crap out of each other when you were playing a Royal Rumble and didn't realize if you threw somebody off the ropes and backed up, you could backdrop them out the ring. So that was always fun. They actually came out with an app, an iOS version, and they had some newer guys in it. It was, the controls were a little, and it just like disappeared. Like, I'm looking for it in my library, and it's like, what happened to it? I know when apps stop getting supported, they don't work anymore, or they don't, you know, or aren't updated for the new system, operating system. But, yeah, that was a fun game. You know, now I am an arcade one-up. You know, I have one. I have others on my wish list. And WrestleFest, you know, I saw a discussion earlier today in one of the fan groups that I'm part of, and you know, they don't think they'll ever be able to do that because of you know, the cost to remove WWF from it and replace it with WWE, and plus some of the likenesses, I guess, they would have to get paid. But there's a wrestling game coming out, I think, in one of the one-ups. It was a lesser-known game because they were all made-up guys, but one of the guys looked like Hawk. I'm trying to remember. It's like Wrestling All-Stars.
RetroSoft, that is yeah. My friend always is sending me up. Hold on. Well, yeah, RetroSoft Studios, Retromania Arcade. It's the official sequel to WrestleFest, and it is done in part by the people who made WrestleFest. The same graphics, same play. They have like a lot of lesser known people. Like, I mean, Blue Meanie's part of it, but they've also started to expand the roster. They have like Nick Aldis, like NWA guys are on it. Cabana's on it. Zack Sabre, they've added Jeff Cobb, John Morrison, Nikita Koloff just got added. So I think that's pretty much Jervis was like made the final two of an indie tournament that they have. But yeah, Hawk and Animal are in it as well. It's supposed to come out for everything in July. Switch, PlayStation, Xbox One, and PC.
I believe the name of the game, actually, I'm referring to. That sounds like a lot of fun. I have seen some of those. Listen, it was called Wrestle War.
Okay.
It was released by Sega, and it was in the arcade and also on the Sega Genesis. And that's going to be part of one of the upcoming arcade one-up cabinets that they have, like, you know, with the four different games in it. So, really looking forward to that. It should be a lot of fun. Wrestling games are always. Oh, it's great. Well done, well, at least not when they're all buggy. All right, so then we're going to take a break. Let's reset to get a couple of more, you know, involved conversations that are going to develop with a couple of the last topics we're going to talk about today. So with Chad Campbell, Steve Willey, and Jordan Duncan, I'm Andy Athens. Stick around. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to episode 2 of Place to Be Nation's Great Debate Wrestling Edition here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed. I'm Andy Afton. I'm hanging out here with Chad Campbell, Jordan Duncan, and Steve Willey. We're going to get back to debating wrestling topics. This is what we're doing. But first of all, we're going to talk about some stuff that's going on here at Place to Be Nation. On here on the Wrestling Feed, newest episode of Jenny and the Gems. The band travels back to March 1994 for the March to WrestleMania 10, Yokozuna, an incredible Randy Savage promo, and so much more. Scott and Dr. G are back with the newest episode of the NWA Saturday Special, where you, Chad, you were there to join the guys to talk the legacy of Houston wrestling. Sounds like a fun time.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Kind of quick primer on Houston wrestling as a territory. So quick, about an hour, but really fun to discuss that with the guys.
Mm-hmm. Great guys. Awesome show there. On the newest main event, Scott, Nate, and you, Steve, you discussed the WWE departures, which we talked about a little bit, and where they might go, as well as the Dark Side of the Ring series and some classic WCW match picks. Sounds like a little fun there. A newest episode of With This Ring has Ryan and Cindy looking at 5 Royal Rumble matches. They talk about the beginnings of the Royal Rumble as just another chance for WWF to screw with Jim Crockett Promotions and much, much more. Episode 41 of Royal One Seat One, Ben is joined by David McKinney and Matt Griffin about the Atlanta wrestling scene. on the Pop feed on the newest episode of Pop Goes the Classics. It was just me and Miranda. Unfortunately, Chad couldn't make it, but we continued our Disney animated series, and we talked about 1940s Fantasia. It was a lot of fun. Didn't realize I don't love Fantasia as much as I thought I did. So check that one out. with everything that's going on in the world, I've been doing some bonus episodes of Laugh in Theater, and I had Sean Kidd by to watch 1984's Police Academy. It was a lot of fun. It was one of our bonus episodes. And on the last episode of the regular Laugh in Theater, I was with Ray Carcillo of the Geeks Who Like Sports podcast, and we watched 1988's Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And that was tremendous. That was a blast. Ray really is great and knows his stuff when it comes to Roger Rabbit. And on the newest, it was a thing on TV, the trio had a triple header of Rip Taylor, The Price is Right, and 1997 Internet, and more. Don't forget to check out the other feeds, the North-South Connection and the Jenny Position, all kinds of great shows, as well as check out the social media pages for all Place to Be Nation. The Greatest Junk Food Tournament should be up and underway, hopefully by the time you listen to this. So we'll talk about that maybe towards the end of the show and see if the guys have any picks for that tournament. So, back to the great debate, though. We're going to talk the Hall of Fame. So I've asked each of the gentlemen here to build a Hall of Fame class with the wrestlers still not in. So this is the parameters I've given them. They are to come up with a headliner, a tag team, a singles wrestler, a female wrestler, someone that made their name outside WWE, and a celebrity. So we're going to start with, I think we'll start with Chad. Chad, let's build your Hall of Fame class. You guys want to go around with each category? I think that's a little better way to do it. We'll go around with headliners, or you guys want to build the class top to bottom? What's your preference?
We can kind of go round robin.
Yeah, similar how we did. Maybe. Yeah, we did earlier. Okay, so Chad, who's your headliner of your Hall of Fame class?
I'm so glad you started with me, because I don't think there's a ton of headliners left for the WWE Hall of Fame, to be honest. Maybe when you get into the newer generation, like, you could probably all put in a John Cena or whatnot. But I went with The Rock. I think that's kind of a slam dunk. Headliner, biggest movie star in the world. Put him in the Hall of Fame. You know, I'm sure he'd be welcome with open arms any time. He wanted to be in the Hall of Fame, so that's who I went with.
All right. Jordan, who's your headliner in your Hall of Fame class?
Yeah, I thought The Rock, too, but I did come up with a second answer just in case somebody said The Rock, and I just said Undertaker. He's not in yet, is he? But I think, I mean, that's kind of a slam dunk choice. Whenever I guess maybe the only thing holding it up is that he still wrestles at WrestleMania, but yeah, I think Undertaker's an easy layup.
All right, Steve, who about you? What's your headliner?
My headliner first choice would be The Rock. My second choice would be The Undertaker.
It's okay. Great minds think alike, you know.
Yeah. God, you know what would be the greatest one ever? Are you ready? Stephanie McMahon.
Oh. Well, we were asked to pick a female. So.
That's gonna happen. I mean, that's gonna happen at some point. Yeah.
Oh, it's gonna be so good. I would say The Rock is the big the gimme.
Is Vince himself in?
No.
No, I don't think he'll go in.
Not while he's alive.
I think he'll be post.
Yeah, once he dies.
Yeah.
I mean, he like.
So never got it.
Didn't basically. Artie Evans get fired or quit because he wrote a promo that he like Vince didn't want anyone saying his name during the speeches, and part of his speech for I think it was Brett Robert Evans helped write it, and they had Vince in there, and so Vince got all ticked off.
Yeah, that was part of him getting canned.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, so we're gonna kind of snake it a little bit. And we'll go start with Jordan for the tag team. What's your tag team in your class?
So I have to admit, I couldn't tell you half the people in the Hall of Fame. So I was just thinking, like, okay, who are the obvious ones that are in? And I don't think Demolition is in. And I think with WWF Hall of Fame, WWE Hall of Fame, I think they're a worthy choice. I think for guys our age, especially who grew up with Hulk Hogan, Rocket Wrestling. They were a little after that, but late 80s into the 90s. I think Demolition's a good choice.
Mm-hmm. All right. Steve?
Action Smash.
Action Smash. Yeah, not the... not
Crutch.
Yeah.
Moondog. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's the Axe is like the holdup, right? Because he's suing them or something, right? Something to do with it. I think that's the main reason why they're not
Maybe.
In. Because he's persona non grata with the company right now.
Oh, God, just get over all that stuff.
all right, Steve, who's your tag team?
I don't think these guys are in yet. I haven't really watched the Hall of Fame for a few years. But how about the Steiner Brothers?
No, that's good.
Rick and Scott, like, I don't know a reason why they wouldn't be included in. You know, they were obviously one of the best tag teams in WCW history. Their run in the WWF was short, but, you know, not great, but they were still pretty high up on top of the tag team, and Scott Steiner would give a hell of a promo. Like, I don't feel like any of them have done something bad.
Yeah, I think that might be why they're not in, is they're afraid to let Scott Steiner give a speech.
Well, I mean, they let the Ultimate Warrior speak. And...
Yeah, that's true.
The Bushwhackers speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, that would be fun. Chad, what about you? Who's your tag team?
Yeah, Slim Pickens now. I am going to go, I've written down the Powers of Pain.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, kind of a beefy tag team. They had a little run there. And I'd be interested to see what a Warlord Hall of Fame speech consisted of. So,
10 years from now, when we're doing Great Debate 32, we can talk about the Faces of Fear getting in.
All right. Steve, we're going to start with you for the next one. Who's your single wrestler? He's not your headliner, but he's like, you know, your Tito Santana type guy.
Okay. This guy, it's a shame that he was not in there before he passed. Vader.
Yeah.
Like he should have been in years ago. Arguably the best, one of the best big guy wrestlers ever. People, you know, a great heel, loved, you know, for his Japan stuff, his Europe stuff. Yeah, he, like, didn't get to do that much in WWF, but, you know, people... Really? Like, how many people say bad things about Vader as a worker, yeah, besides maybe he was too stiff? You know, the great run with Sting, some of Sting's best ever matches. I have no idea why he, unless that was one of those guys like, oh, he'll always be there, we'll just put him in whenever. But yeah, that's a no-brainer for me. Should have been in before he died, and it's a shame he wasn't.
All right. All right. Chad, who's your singles wrestler?
I went with Lex Luger, actually, for this one.
Gotta look up another name real quick.
To me, he had a WWF run and obviously had more success elsewhere, but, you know, had a good run with the promotions, not in there, and is kind of one of the bigger names as I was perusing the list of somebody that was not currently in the Hall of Fame.
All right. Jordan, you need more time to Google?
Yeah, I had Lex Luger. I think he's a perfect choice for not the top guy, but definitely should be in there. You know, we mentioned him earlier. You mentioned Mandy as a guy that they dropped the ball with, but like late 90s WCW, Luger was a really big deal. How about Sid? Is Sid in the Hall of Fame?
I don't think so. No.
I don't think he is. I think Sid's a good choice. Luger is my pick, but just to pick a different name than Chad, I think Sid fits, you know, checks all the boxes for what they need. He's former champion in both companies, big star.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I don't know that there's really bad blood there. I don't know. Maybe softball tournaments.
Depends when. I was going to say depends when softball season starts.
Maybe he has has beef with Braun's father, who's a. As a professional softball player, so.
Yeah, but I think Sid's a legit good choice to get in there.
All right, what Chad? Who's your female wrestler on your Hall of Fame class?
I'm on a lot of the other guys to probably pick some of the more obvious names for this one. So I'm gonna go with Bull Nakano.
Ah,
even when I try to be nice. she's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, male or female. And, you know, had a short little run there with the Lucha Bros. But as you start to think about the progression of women's wrestling throughout the years and think about, in, especially in the WWF landscape, what you had from the Velvet McIntyre to Fabulous Moolah to Rockin' Robin, into the TNA era, and then finally with like Trish Stratus and some competent wrestlers, Bull Nakano and Alundra were kind of the bright spot in that really 20-year period there. Mm-hmm. And just somebody that I would love to see in the Hall of Fame, somebody that's in amazing shape still, actually lost a lot of weight after she retired from wrestling and is looks in great physical condition even now, and doesn't make a lot of public appearances. It's not frequent in Japan or stateside, so it'd be interesting to see her at the Hall of Fame ceremony.
Yeah, actually watched a Alundra Blaze Bull Nakano match from behind a curtain standing next to Lex Luger. So it was interesting. It was, yeah, I probably told the story, but it was when I got picked to be the ring announcer at a house show at Madison Square Garden. And just standing there, and while I'm backstage, I, you know, got the whole spiel from Howard Finkel, and they showed me what I was going to be doing, and they put the T-shirt on me, and I signed a waiver. So I'm just standing there, and that match is going on, and Luger just turns to me, and he goes, "Fuck, that Japanese girl's good." I'm like, okay, whatever you say. Jordan, who's your female wrestler?
First of all, I'm ashamed that you didn't go into business for yourself if you had a microphone in your hand in the ring in Madison Square Garden. You should have went full shoot. But
I did get booed by 14,000 yeah. people. They just had to say my name.
Right.
And
so obviously,
you know, San Martino sucks.
ECW, Baba Booey, Baba Booey.
You should have seen. I wish they had a camera on my face when they showed me the paper and I just got to see a match I was going to announce. It was Aldo Montoya. Was Aldo Montoya versus Stephen Dunn of Well Done.
Nice.
Thanks, man, guys.
Nowhere in the country. Like, did I win or lose this contest?
I got a free T-shirt out of it.
So my pick is kind of the opposite of why Chad went with his, and I just went with just in terms of the biggest star, and I think Sable is a choice. I can understand why she's not in there or probably ever going to be. But when you look at the Attitude Era and one of the most successful eras in history, Sable was one of the top stars, like to the point where at her peak, she may have been behind maybe Austin or Rock in terms of popularity of people in the company. Obviously, she wasn't much of a wrestler, but she was a huge, huge, huge star. And there's a lot of people in there that had less star power and less heights than she did. So mm-hmm. I just think she's a decent choice.
All right. Cool. Steve, who's your female on your Hall of Fame class?
My female, I think Bull Nakano and Sable are great picks. My sad Bull Nakano story that I've actually had currently, which is a coincidence of people we've talked. No one cares about this, but I'm going to say it anyway. on my kind of DVD watches that I've started over the last few months with, you know, nothing really on in terms of wrestling, I just watched the Kings of Wrestling DVD from Stuff in Japan. And next on my list was this Bull Nakano DVD. And I'm so excited because I haven't seen much of her Japan stuff. And I put it in the DVD player and it doesn't work on any DVD player. It's just like, oh, I'm sure I could find everything on there like in 5 minutes, but it's just like, oh, I have this DVD. Yeah, heartbreaking. Sable's a great pick. I'm going to pick someone who is, I feel that might go in at some point, knowing the type of women they've been putting in. But it's someone who I just really, like an underrated worker for the time period, and someone who I've met who is one of, and seen several times in person, is one of the nicest and most genuinely fun.
I think I know who it is.
Wrestlers, Victoria.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Yep.
Yeah, good worker for a time. I have still to this day, and I should have asked her. We went to her restaurant, my friends and I, before Chikara's show was still around. And I'm sure I told this story before, but it was earlier in the day. It was like 11:30 noon, The only other people in there was the current NXT tag team, Ever-Rise. I think they were 3.0 at the time. And instead of going to them, she came and sat down with us. And, like, we didn't ask her. She came up, sat down with us, and just, like, hung out with us and talked to us for a fair amount of time, like more than an owner of a restaurant would usually do. And it wasn't really even about wrestling. It was just about just random stuff. And I've seen her, in, like, she was living in the Chicago area for a while, so we'd see her pop up at a lot of shows. Still to this day, I have no idea how she got WWF to pay for the rights to that tattoo song for her theme. Because they didn't use any outside themes at that time. You know, they were making their stuff in-house, or they were going out and putting out their, like, what was it, like their metal CD or whatever, where they would get people to remix the songs. And she had a legit theme song, and it really fit with her personality. And anytime I hear that song, which is really rare because it's a, you know, really small one-hit wonder, like instantly it's her. And yeah, I just think, like, she would fit into the Hall of Fame class, like an Ivory or a Molly Holly. And I think she would give a really, really fun speech as well.
Yeah, I heard that song on, I don't know, when did that song come out? It came out in the early 2000s, right?
Yeah.
So I heard that on, like, you know, Sirius XM one day. And yeah, in my head, I had Victoria's head spinning, the eye coming out of her hand. Incidentally, Tattoo did have another song that didn't hit as much called Not Gonna Get Us. That was a DJ back then. So it wasn't as wasn't as good, though. It was like one of those, like, it was like their second attempt, their follow-up, which didn't catch on at all. It just happened to be on one of those promo CDs I would get when I was a had a subscription service. So who'd we lead off?
Challenge accepted.
All right. Who's your, Jordan, who's your outside WWE person?
So I have two different options here. One, just a little rant. I'm not a big Hall of Fame guy anyways. I don't care a whole lot about this. I don't like the legacy wing where they just take like seven or eight super old guys and be like, oh yeah, we threw these guys in this year too. I feel like that's not really in the Hall of Fame. So this guy's actually in the legacy wing, but Bruiser Brody came to my mind. So I guess technically he's already in there, but I think like a legitimate induction. I think Bruiser Brody was a big enough star. And I think a lot of fans don't know much about him. I think just the footage you could use, it would be really, really cool. But I guess since he's already in there, I kind of went with since they've been inducting, me and Steve were talking, I think Liger might be in. Tatsumi Fujinami's in there, Antonio Inoki. So thinking that, I went with the Great Muta. I think Muta would be a good choice because he's got the American exposure from, you know, his NWA days, his feuds with Sting, things like that. I think a lot of American fans know him pretty well. And I think he's definitely worthy of being a Hall of Famer in a wrestling Hall of Fame. So if I could pick Brody and say, you know, the legacy wing doesn't count and like a legitimate someone gives a speech for him, he gets honored with a video and all that stuff, I'd pick Brody. If I don't, I think I'd go with Muta.
Well, I didn't even know there was a legacy wing where they just
threw kind people of my in. Point. You know, like they don't, it's not part of like the Hall of Fame ceremonies or anything like that. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, and here's our legacy inductees, and it's usually like seven or eight older guys.
This sounds like the, how they do the technical, whatever the technical Oscars.
Yeah, the awards don't get shown on TV.
Yeah. All right, Steve, who's your outside WWE person?
Okay, please correct me, guys, if he's in there because I don't think he is. It's the most famous Mexican wrestler of all time, Blue Demon.
I know El Santo's in the legacy.
Yeah, Santo's in the legacy, but Blue
Demon. So I doubt Blue Demon's in anything.
Yeah, I mean, that Santo would be like the other most famous. But I mean, Blue Demon, you could still, if you go to Mexico, you can get his mask anywhere.
Yeah.
In any store, in any like farmer's market type thing. But I mean, someone who is in countless amounts of movies in Mexico that made it up, you know, was a staple on syndicated television, you know, back in our childhood. I'm just quick looking him up after I said him. Been around, was like, he wrestled for over 40 years. First ballot, first ever Hall of Fame class for the Wrestling Observer. So, yeah, you know, it wouldn't be hard to find some. I mean, if they can, you know, get the Junkyard Dogs daughter, you know, it wouldn't be hard to find someone. I mean, I think his son's still alive as well.
Yeah, probably.
All right, Chad, outside WWE.
Yeah, Muda, I think, is a great pick. He's somebody I didn't think of, but I kind of wish I would have. So I kind of went with a little bit off the beaten path for this selection, and it was because I watched a YouTube video series of this guy last night, and I'm picking Nigel McGuinness.
Yeah.
I mean, he's somebody in the company.
That's good.
Somebody had a real good long run in Ring of Honor, helped carry that promotion towards the end of its creative and artistic peak in 2007, 2008, as Danielson was more sporadic with his appearances. And just somebody that I've kind of went on a deep dive today as we're recording this. I listened to a Kevin Steen show, interview with Nigel today.
I'm watching that right now.
It's
a long one.
Yeah, it is a long one.
He is not. Like, if I were to make a list and you were to put a gun to my head, probably would be one of my top 10 favorite wrestlers of all time.
Yeah, he's somebody that I just
not the like best, but favorite.
Well, I tell you what, with the best, like, about a month ago, you know, I updated my top 100 wrestlers and I made that list, and he was excluded. And I think that's part of, like, the tragedy with him is if you're not really entrenched in that era and rewatching it at the time, which I haven't been watching a lot of his era of Ring of Honor much, he's just sort of out of sight, out of mind, because once he failed the physical to get into WWE and went to TNA for, like, a year or so, but then that's it. So he has – you know, only, I mean, it's a 6 or 7 year run, but he was absolutely like one of the best in the world for any year from like 2004 through 2009. And so,
beloved by the,
by
most of your main roster guys who came up from that, like your Samoa Joe, your Brian Danielson, your Claudio's, your Seth Rollins. Absolutely. I mean, that interview with Steen, I didn't watch all of it, but Steen was pretty – that was, like, right before Steen went to the WWE, like, was trying to convince him on camera to, like, what are you doing? Get back in the ring.
Yeah.
You know, you could do this. And, yeah, he's just an amazing wrestler.
Yeah, he seemed pretty enamored with him, and he's very well-spoken, too. Like, intellectually, I think his speech would be very interesting to hear, and I think he'd do a good job. And, you know, he'd treat it with some gravity, and I think he'd actually, just knowing some of the mental struggles he's went through since he had to retire or whatnot, I think it would mean something to him, you know.
Yeah, I could talk about him all day. Almost a Place to Be Nation guy, Nigel McGuinness.
That would have been quite a catch. Steve, who's your celebrity rounding out the class?
This is the easiest one. I don't know. She should have been in the first class when they would have it in the banquet hall. Cyndi Lauper. Mm-hmm.
She's not in?
No, arguably. Wow. I would argue that that WrestleMania 1 would not have been a success without Cyndi Lauper's involvement. Because without Cyndi Lauper and what was his name? Something Wolf, like her manager at the time, they would have not gotten that clearance on MTV to go on for the war to settle the score, which would not have gone to mainstream publicity where like Hogan's and Sports Illustrated and WrestleMania 1 would have gone nowhere. I have unless she didn't want to do it. But I don't see why not.
No.
Yeah, I mean, she's doing like commercials for like eczema or something, you know, still to this day, like she'll pop up. And like, I just don't think she gets enough credit for her importance to that time period.
Yeah.
And maybe it's Vince McMahon wanted to rewrite like that. It was all him or something like that. But
no, arguably one of the top five female artists in the
early... I thought she was in the Hall of Fame.
Nope.
That surprises me.
Yeah,
I did a check like before we went on because that's out, like every year I think like why is she not in? She has to be the celebrity this year. She has to be. It's a big name. Nope.
That's amazing. That is utterly amazing because she was the Rock in wrestling. She was the Rock of it, you know, so to speak. And the whole Wendy Richter, you know, Captain Lou is in the Girls Just Wanna Have Fun video. So that blows my mind. Chad, who's your celebrity?
So again, I'm kind of drawing inspiration for something that's going on currently that I'm watching, and that's the Last Ride documentary, and so I'm going with Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
I think he has some infamous wrestling appearances, none with WWE, but who cares? They own WCW anyway now, so just throw him in there.
Yeah, that's a good one. And Jordan, who's your celebrity?
I could see them putting Rodman in. I went with Andy Kaufman.
Oh, yeah.
Just because that was such a big deal. Again, another thing where it wasn't WWE, but, I mean, he got a David Letterman with Lawler and all that stuff. And Lawler could give a speech, putting him in. Do they even do speeches for the celebrities? I guess they do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it surprised me a little bit that Andy Kaufman wasn't in. Maybe just because it wasn't a WWF thing, but yeah, I think
Drew Carey is in.
Right. I almost wonder, like, if here in Cyndi Lauper's not in, I wonder if their thought with celebrity is like, okay, we need somebody that people nowadays know who, and I guess maybe the general wrestling fandom wouldn't know who Andy Kaufman is right now.
Yeah, that's true. I guess they should
age us a little bit, to date us a little bit. Yeah. General fans might not know Cyndi Lauper either, whereas Dennis Rodman, I think, could go in like next year. People would be like, oh, Dennis Rodman, they know him. But yeah, I think Andy Kaufman is like a perfect example of celebrities involved in wrestling that brought it into the mainstream a little bit and saw some success there.
Yeah, I mean, they should also check with their sponsors first, too, before they put, you know, like the little Kid Rock situation. You know what just came to me? Now that, unfortunately, he's passed away, I could see them putting in Lemmy, you know, for the theme songs, you know, between, you know, the Triple H and the Evolution and all that stuff. I could definitely see that with Triple H.
My other choice would have been the Where's the Beef lady.
Because she was the... what was she, the bell, the ring keep, the
timekeeper, right? Or something?
Yeah.
In the Los Angeles part of WrestleMania 2.
Yeah, and then Herb was on the same show, wasn't he? Herb?
Yeah, Herb is on that show.
And Ricky Schroeder, I think, was also, I think, the ring announcer or something in L.A. You know, throw him in there. Just throw all the WrestleMania 2 celebrities in together. Celebrity.
Herb was nothing.
All right. Any guys got any others that you didn't get to speak about in terms of?
I thought Shaquille O'Neal could have been somebody for the other. And then I did think for a minute as I was trying to think of a celebrity, I did put up Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I think that would have been, you know, they could dig him up and just to see, you know, what he looks like now. And giving the speech.
Jeremy Piven, so we could call it Summer Fest again.
Right.
All right. For women,
Steve.
I did think of the possibility of Miss Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just don't know. I don't think she's in.
No, she's not. Also, Vicky Guerrero. Mm-hmm. I thought she might get picked. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think she's actually now getting pretty underrated historically as she was really one of the last kind of heel managers they utilized.
And just got heat every time you heard her open her mouth. Who actually, earlier tonight, I was flipping channels, she appeared on AEW for a hot second tonight. Videos that are going around? Like, they did it with the Divas, the the women wrestlers, where they were like, they would be like all like, you know, plain, like pajamas, no makeup, and then they would put like a thing on their face. Yeah, and they would turn this like it's going around. There's one with Disney characters, so they did something with that. That started with the Inner Circle, where they would punch the camera, and then somebody would like fall back, like they just got hit. So yeah, it turned out like Kevin Smith was one of the people in it. Fluffy was another. It actually looked like a little bit of fun, but I was like, whoa, Vicky Guerrero's there all of a sudden, and a few other people. So yeah, that's a fun thing. Yeah, so awesome job, guys. So we're going to move on to the end of the show here, which is the rapid fire section. That's where I have 10 questions, and they're always this or that kind of things. And we're going to kind of go around. You guys can just give the answer. If you want to give a little explanation on why you're going with whatever answer you are, you're free to do so. So we're going to start with Jordan. We're going to talk about a move. We talked about power slams earlier. We're going to talk about the choke slam. Whose choke slam of these two do you prefer? Is it Kane or the Big Show?
I would say Kane, because I don't like when Big Show would like fall with the choke slam. Mm-hmm. Whereas I like Kane getting the extended arm. I feel like even though Big Show's a bigger guy, I think Kane's just looked better.
Yeah, with the way he would smack it. Steve, yeah. What do you say?
I'll say the Big Show, just because I more think of him as the giant a lot of times, and maybe it's sure. The stuff I listen to, where sometimes he would fall with him, but sometimes, I don't know if he was just in a bad mood or there was like six guys coming after him at once in some of those crazy matches, like handicap matches, he would really throw it down.
Yeah. Chad, what about you?
I am going to pick Kane, and that's probably the only time I would prefer.
I had that thought in my head.
Yeah.
I'm like, Andy made me pick Kane.
I know. I thought about putting 911 in there or something like that. When I was like, how many times do people pick 911 as a preference on something?
Yeah, right.
All right. We're going to go over to Steve. Now, there have been wrestlers referred to as tag team specialists. So I'm going to give you two of them, and you got to say who is the when you think of tag team specialists, which one's the top of the list? Is it Arn Anderson or Bobby Eaton?
Sorry, Chad. Arn Anderson looks like my father, so I have to pick Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson maybe enjoy Larry Zbyszko for a little bit, so that's also a pretty big deal as well. Because right. I hate Larry Zbyszko.
All right, Chad, what's your answer?
Yeah, this is insanely tough. I'm gonna go with Bobby Eaton, but
I thought you were gonna go with Eaton.
Well, yeah, it's razor close for me.
Yeah.
Well, I also want to thank you
for the top five
for not calling me a son of a bitch like Cascola does when I do these things. Jordan, what about you? Arn Anderson or Bobby Eaton is your tag team?
I'm glad I got to go last, so I had like a full minute to think about this. I think my gut says Bobby Eaton, just because they both do everything so well. Maybe because Bobby does some top rope stuff too, so maybe the potential to be a baby face is a little bit better. Although Arn. Yeah, I just, my gut says Bobby Eaton, so I take Bobby Eaton.
All right.
I'm the outlier on these.
Yeah.
All right.
Jeez.
Chad, we're going to go with gimmicks. So a couple of gimmicks that were portrayed by Charles Wright. Let's go with Papa Shango or the Godfather.
Oh. Back to the crap.
Yeah. You know, fireworks don't shoot out my ass. This is the show, guys. Okay. Is that all?
God, I don't know. Papa Shango was pretty business exposing for me, even as a 6 year old. I guess I'm going to go with the Godfather because as it did have its time and place in the Attitude Era, but it's also not something that looks very great in 2020 eyes to look back on.
All right, Jordan.
Yeah, I think Papa Shango was a 90s gimmick that felt like it should have been from 83 or so. You know, just felt like it came along too late. I'm not a fan particularly of either one, but if I have to pick one, I'll say The Godfather.
All right. Steve.
Did you guys see him on the Brawl for All, Dark Side of the Ring?
I haven't watched that one yet.
It's great. He's basically the Godfather character in real life.
Oh,
yeah, it's awful. You know, he smokes pot, just so you know. He'll let you know about it. Can I say Kama Mustafa? Like that haircut when he...
You could say Kama the Supreme Fighting Machine.
Yeah.
You say the Goodfather if you want.
Yeah. Yeah, when he like melted down.
Soul Taker.
Chain. God. I'll say Kama, but I'll go with Godfather for the sake of the question. Okay. But I won't like it.
Against your will. Okay. Jordan, a couple of factions. The Triple Threat or Undisputed Era?
Like ECW's Triple Threat?
Yeah, ECW's Triple Threat. Sorry, I should have prefaced that.
Oh, man. nostalgia makes me think them, but I don't know. I haven't watched ECW for a hot minute, but I feel like when I would rewatch it, I was not high on Shane Douglas, especially. Just like Arn Anderson looks like Steve Willey's dad, I'm going to lie and say that Adam Cole looks like my dad, even though he doesn't, so I'll pick them.
All right. Steve, Triple Threat or Undisputed Era?
Even though Bobby Fish almost threw a chair at me once, I will take Undisputed Era easily. I do not like Shane Douglas. He has never been one of the worst finishing moves ever.
The Bailey to belly?
Yeah, I mean, I like Bam Bam Bigelow, and we didn't get to see really what Chris Candido did that much.
Like Candido,
But I mean, Roderick Strong's one of my favorite current wrestlers. You know, even still, when he doesn't, you don't see him as much on NXT anymore. But even when he gets in there with like big guys, he can still go. So yeah, that's an easy one for me.
All right, Chad.
Yeah, I'm going to make it a 3-for-3 with Undisputed Era.
All right. Would it have been better to put Triple Threat up against X-Factor?
Triple Threat versus Evolution might have,
Been more even.
Made me had to ponder. Okay. I think most people would say Evolution, but three Triple H haters on this call. So.
All right.
Some of us would like to see him in AEW, Chad.
His girlfriend's a dentist. All right.
We'll never know if that was Jordan just straight up trolling Chad or not. Oh my God.
All right. So there have been talk shows. We're going to talk about a couple. The Funeral Parlor or the King's Court? Let's start with Steve.
God, I hate that. I'll say the Funeral Parlor because it more reminds me of my childhood, I guess. I don't remember. I mean, the King's Court had a couple funny ones in the, like, 94, with, like, the hearts and such. But Funeral Parlor also had, like, the Jake Roberts stuff. I'll say that one.
All right. Chad, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I love Lawler, but unfortunately, King's Court was the most memorable thing. So I'm going to go with the Funeral Parlor. It had a pretty cool aesthetic.
All right. Jordan.
Yeah, I'll do the same thing. Like, when you list both, the first one that comes to my mind in terms of memory is Funeral Parlor. I believe that's where he locked Warrior in the coffin right on the stage. That was a good one. Whereas King's Court was kind of when I was checked out of WWF at the time. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really a fan. So Funeral Parlor, slam dunk there.
I almost put Heartbreak Hotel as one of the choices, too. So
that would have been a tougher call. I still think I would have went Funeral Parlor, though.
Okay.
I can think of Funeral Parlor moments. I can't think of King's Court moments.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, I think Brother Love is one that's interesting with the Funeral Parlor. Yep. I mean, they really went to that well a lot, though. I mean, you got the Snake Pit, mm-hmm. Piper's Pits, of course, the cream of the crop. But
yeah.
Yeah. All right. Chad. Tom Pritchard tag teams, the Heavenly Bodies or the Body Donnas?
Yeah, this is a slam dunk. Heavenly Bodies, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, they really championed that promotion for a while until they lost the Loser Leaves Town match versus the Rock and Roll Express in 1994. You know, great. Really feels like they could have been a second or third rate Midnight Express, but I think they had enough creativity and uniqueness on their own that they really anchor Smoky Mountain Wrestling. So Heavenly Bodies all the way.
All right. Jordan.
Yep, I agree. Heavenly Bodies, everything Chad said. And even if we're just limiting it to WWE, I think they had the best match of either team with that Steiner Brothers match at, what was it, SummerSlam 93? I remember really liking that, comes to mind. I think that's pretty easy for me. All right. Heavenly Bodies.
Steve, another clean sweep.
I love Desirable Dustin and Gigolo Justin, the new Heavenly Bodies from Global Force Wrestling. I will also pick the Heavenly Bodies. A lot of people's introduction to them is the match they had in Smoky Mountain like the Smoky Mountain stuff, that is, versus Jericho and Lance Storm, which is a pretty infamous match. So that would be mine. Right. I mean, as much as I like Cloudy.
All right, Jordan, back to you. We're going to talk about a couple of heel tactics when they pin. Do you prefer a dirty pin or a handful of tights?
So dirty pin is feet on the ropes?
Feet on the ropes, yes, that's correct. That's what I'm going for.
I think feet on the ropes, because it actually like makes sense why it would work, like the leverage. I never understood the handful of tights, like what it's really supposed to do. So dirty pin.
All right, Steve.
I'll say a handful of tights. I think it gets you I think it gets you a little bit extra. And plus there's the, you know, the scary part of showing your Bean and Frank, you know. That's John Kroc, just Bean and Frank. You
know? True, I hadn't thought of that.
And it's more of my dislike of like the foot on the ropes, especially when you're in the corner and you're putting your feet up on the second, you know, the second rope, and you know, it like with the ref not being able to see it, and it's, you know, purposely in position to not see it. It seems fake to me.
Okay.
Business exposing, as you would, you said with Papa John. No.
Chad, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with what Steve said, and that's why I actually am going to go with dirty pin if it's well executed, which is pretty few and far between. But if they can get in a clever position where the ref is clearly out of position to see them utilize the feet on the ropes, I think that's the most effective of the two.
All right, good stuff. All right, Steve, we're going to break down a tag team, and which one is your favorite member? We're going with the Road Warriors. Hawk or Animal?
Well, I'm going to say Animal because he once scared my little sister.
Okay, so we were learning a lot here. Bobby Fish almost threw a chair at you. Animal scared your little sister. You've had a deep conversation with Victoria. I mean,
yes. It's all
Dad about, looks like Arn Anderson.
Dad looks like Arn Anderson. Yes, my Hawk and Animal once scared my little sister at Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg, Illinois.
Okay. Chad, what about you?
This, again, is kind of recent memory, but in watching the 1996 return to WCW that I'm watching with the Road Warriors for Wrestling Warzone, I've not been not been too impressed with Animal at all. He's battling a lot of injuries. So I think I am going to go with Hawk on this one.
Jordan.
All right. Well, my vote is going to be having not watched anything recently and just kind of thinking to my childhood. And I always preferred Animal as a kid. I think the Mohawk was cooler. I liked the spider face paint more than Hawk's face paint. Yeah, I couldn't really tell you who's the better worker without having to watch, but I know Hawk kind of maybe had a bit more of a singles run, but the next year meeting was good. So Animal is the one I always kind of liked a little bit more as a kid.
Okay. Now we're going to go with some moves again. Off the top rope moves, Chad, the shooting star press or the 450 splash?
Yeah. That's tough. I think I'm going to go with the 450, actually. I think when it's done with the rotation and done violently, it looks like it maybe hurts more. You know, if it's not Brock doing the shooting star press trying to kill himself. But I'm thinking more like Hoovy. When he would do the 450, it was really violent looking and would come crashing down on his opponent. So I'm going to go with the 450.
All right, Jordan.
See, my thought would be kind of the other. I think the shooting star press just looks a little more athletic. Yeah, no other reason. I think the shooting star press just looks a little cooler. Something I think Steve has said before is one thing he likes watching the wrestlers is stuff that he could never do. Mm-hmm. And not that I could pull off a 450, but I could at least jump off a top rope and turn forward. I could at least jump forward and spin. Oh.
Yeah. 180.
Yeah, you could go off a diving board maybe and do like maybe like a little bit.
Some degrees of a 450. If I attempted a shooting star press, I would be dead.
So. Yes, that's a good point.
All right, Steve, which is your pick?
If a shooting star press is done well, it's a really cool move. Like an Evan Bourne, Matt Sydal does a really good shooting star press. Mm-hmm. Whereas Billy Kidman, while he was maybe one of the people who made it, that was a scary shooting star press. He popularized it, but that was not pretty. So I'll say that one.
Scary as the lead assault.
Yeah, 450 got exposed a little bit more for me when you have like Ricochet or Jack Evans can do the 630, or like Sammy Guevara can do it. So I'll just say the shooting star press just because it's prettier. All right. Yeah, I would break my neck if I did it.
Yeah. All right. So we're gonna conclude with comparisons of entrance music. We're gonna look at DIY members. So, Jordan, which do you prefer? No One Will Survive, which is Tommaso Ciampa's theme song, or Rebel Heart by Johnny Gargano?
I couldn't even think of what... I don't know what either of them sound like off the top of my head.
Take, like, Taz's beats, and then you kind of throw a little...
Give me the names again. Rebel Heart and No One Will Survive. No One Will
Survive, yeah.
I'm going to go with No One Will Survive. That sounds like a better wrestling theme than Rebel Heart.
Hold on. I could do this really quick because my son downloaded them. Ready? Here we go. Here's No One Will Survive. Okay. Wait, that's actually not it. That's Ricochet.
One and only.
That's why I said it sounds kind of like Taz.
Okay, now I've got it. Yep.
All right, let's go find Rebel Heart. Here's Rebel Heart now.
Can I vote for Rebel Yell? Oh, you know what? I changed my vote because I like that. That gives you the option to do the quick, Misawa clap, I think.
Yeah, do you like an upbeat song or do you like one of those power songs coming in? All right, so
clearly neither of them have stuck with me.
All right, Steve, do you have a pick?
Even though I like Tommaso way better than Gargano, Gargano's theme is super catchy. Mm-hmm. It's a Rebel Heart, yeah, and I like a good upbeat.
It's not catchy to me, apparently.
Yeah, like a Gargano type, like Sami Zayn song's really fun, like a good upbeat, danceable song. It's almost
like comparing Owens and Zayn's music too.
Mm-hmm. Zayn was not there.
All right, Chad.
After watching their NXT match, I hope to never see or hear either of those two.
It's really that bad.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's not good.
I thought it was bad. It's just too much drama. I also will freely admit that I, until you played Rebel Heart, I had no clue. But once you played it, I will go with that as well. Seemed much more catchy.
All right. Great stuff. Awesome show, guys. I really appreciate it. From the bottom of my heart, you guys are some of the Place to Be Nation members that I listened to way before I joined everybody and became a host over here. So I really appreciate you all taking time to get together and appear on this show tonight. So kind of let's go around the horn now and see what everybody's got coming up, what everybody wants everybody to check out that may be out there already. So Chad, let's start with you. What do you want to tell people about?
Wrestling Warzone. We're heading into WrestleMania 12. We're on the precipice of that, which is probably the biggest show we will do up to this point of doing that podcast that I've done with Justin for almost 2 years now. And then on Carolina Dreaming, we'll be heading into 1985, which is really when the Jim Crockett Promotions starts heating up, formation of the Four Horsemen and all that. So kind of a lot of good stuff coming down the pipeline with both of those shows. And Fighting Spirit 06, well, it's 2006 U.S. wrestling, so we can make fun of TNA and some WWE together with the Boogeyman and relish the Ring of Honor.
All right. So, and don't forget, all those shows are found on the North-South Connection podcast feed, a fine feed brought to you by Chad and Justin. Jordan, what do you got to promote?
Not a whole lot. I'm not big in the podcast game like I used to be. I'm kind of a part-timer, just call my shots now. But we do Body Press Your Luck every month, where I'm just in awe of Ryan Everett every time we do these shows. Like, I try to be quiet while he's giving answers, and I just, like, laugh when I'm like, there's no one in the world knows this answer. And he says it before the question's even done being, like, read. I just laugh, you know? But there is some talk behind the scenes of a group podcast when The Last Dance finishes airing. Just kind of our thoughts on the entire 10-part Chicago Bulls documentary series.
Yes, look forward to that if it comes together. I am very interested. I think a lot of our listeners...
I love it when a pod comes together.
Yes, that's
going to be Jordan Duncan and a naked Carmen Electra.
Yeah. If you get the high school Jordan Duncan that, he would have built a time machine by
now. Ryan Everett, guarantee he knows the name of Johnny Gargano's theme song. Not a doubt in my mind.
And who wrote it.
I don't know. Look, every good thing comes to an end. Maybe at some point something will happen. Who knows? But it's a fun ride to
I've already started a Kickstarter for the Last Dance documentary about when Ryan finally loses it. By the
He's going to be bloodshot like MJ.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Just
Steve.
Walk off refusing to shake hands.
Steve, what do you got to promote and point people towards?
Well, since the time we're taping us, we're all locked up. That didn't come out right. I'm getting tired. We're all kind of locked in. I've been doing more podcasts, which is kind of been a lifesaver for me. It's given me a chance to talk to friends and be social. So I am doing Main Event as usual every other week, looking at current wrestling. It's a stretch right now to do that first section. Mm-hmm. So we started doing some classic WCW matches for the GWCW project. We have done classic New Japan matches in the past, and once a month we do the Dreck of All Dreck, the TNA 2002 recap. We're almost done. Vince Russo is now a part of it on screen, so if you want some worst of the worst wrestling and listen to us make fun of it and question life choices, it's a good podcast to listen to. I'm also doing International House of Combat for Pro Wrestling Only, which is doing with Kelly Nelson. And we are looking at all non-United States wrestling. And most of it is way, way, way older, like before 1990. It has been really fun. It's kind of a live watch, but we're not doing play-by-play where we're talking about what's going on with each of the wrestlers. Some of them are learning about the wrestlers who have never seen before. And the first episode has Lord Alfred Hayes in 1950 France. It's awesome. So it's been a really fun thing that I just took a chance on. And then once every couple weeks during the coronavirus lockdown, I've been doing a show on Nate Milton's Kings of Sport, the Patreon feed, which I highly recommend chipping a couple bucks in to listen to. It's called TDT Talks, and Nate and I just talk to, he calls it half group therapy, half podcast all-star team. Talk about what we're doing during the coronavirus. I kind of talk about the psychology of it, of coronavirus, what's going on in the world, how we're all doing, coping mechanisms. And the fun part is completely stolen from NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. Like, what's making us happy this week, like something we're watching or reading. And I'm taping one tomorrow, which will be out later this week. And we are trying to get Damian Abraham. We're just trying to mesh our schedules together, who's done a lot with post-wrestling, but also did the documentary, The Wrestlers, also in the band, Fucked Up. So I think that the more I say it, the more it will finally come to happen, because it is just the three of us getting our schedules together.
Awesome. Hopefully, and maybe one day you and Glenn can get back together and you can tell us something good.
Yes.
There's always hope for that, As for myself, right now on the pop feed, we're going through some transitions right now. So there's extra episodes of Laughing Theater also due to the current situation. I'm getting almost weekly group watches together. The next one you're going to hear will be myself, Sean Kidd, and Logan Croslin. We watched the 2005 comedy Just Friends. Had a lot of flashbacks for some of us to our high school days and stuff like that. So that was a lot of fun. The latest episode of Laughing Theater, which should be up by the time you hear this, Mr. Gerasimio D'Amato came back and we watched Animal House, the classic from 1978. And future episodes coming up are The Goonies with Peter Winson and Ace Ventura Pet Detective with Logan making his debut. Over here on the wrestling feed, as Jordan mentioned, Body Pressure Luck, that's hosted by himself and Justin Rosero. I'm there to help keep score and Stutch and just, yeah, like he said, like just stay in awe of Ryan right now. Like we have our little chats that we like kind of talk to each other during the show. And it's just like, it's unbelievable what this guy can do. So yeah. Tune into that. And also, speaking of Justin, he is going to be the guest on episode 2 of my new show here on the Wrestling Feed, The Evolution Of, and we're going to be breaking down the career of Macho Man Randy Savage. So I really look forward to jumping into that with Justin. And don't forget to check out all the other feeds like North-South Connection and the Jenny Position as well as the website, placetobenation.com. We have new articles, fresh takes. We have new writers. Jordan recommended a brand new writer, Eric Hinkle, and he is writing some great football stuff. So you guys can all check it out. He's been breaking down the draft, and it's been a lot of fun to have him join the staff on the site. As well as check out all the Facebook pages for a lot of the shows. And don't forget the Greatest Junk Food Tournament. Right before we say goodbye, though, I want to kind of go around the horn. You guys got any picks, anything you think is going to go far? Now, it's going to be broken down into chips, cookies, snacks, cakes, like that's like Twinkies and cupcakes, and salty treats. That's like anything that's not a chip, like popcorn. Maybe some pretzels or Slim Jims. So let's go around. Jordan, do you have any things you think are going to go far in this tournament?
Well, I correctly predicted the Chicago Bulls logo winning, so I'm going to put my stamp of approval. I don't want to ruin my prediction. I'm going to say double stuffed Oreos.
Oh, okay. They are in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We haven't done the seedings yet, but yes, they are in the cookie region. Yeah. Steve, what about you? What do you think will win this tournament?
Oh, God, I have no idea what will win, but I think a sneaky one that will go really far is combos.
Yes, that is in there.
I will fight for the Hostess or Dolly Madison fruit pies to the death.
Oh, yes, man. I believe we have Hostess fruit pies in there. I can't tell you how many. I think there might be actually two or three in there.
Are the chocolate pies in, too?
No.
Those are so good.
I can tell you that two or three would be the minimum of the apple pies that I would eat.
Yes, I believe we have...
Well, it's apples, so it's good for me.
Yeah. We have... I can look at the sheet really quick. And we have, I believe, apple, cherry, and blueberry are in the snack food region. So it should be interesting. As long as Snowballs don't win, because much like Woody Harrelson's character in Zombieland, I hate coconut. For the taste and the texture. Chad, what do you think could win this snack junk food tournament we have coming up?
I think I'm on back sour cream and onion chips.
Yes. Yes, I believe we do have Lay's potato chip sour cream and onion is one of the entrants in the chip region. So should be a lot of fun. It's very interesting to see how these tournaments play out, even these like smaller ones, how passionate people get about their choices. Which is always a lot of fun, which is why we do it here at Place of Nation. But I want to have a big thank you to Chad Campbell, Jordan Duncan, and Steve Woolley for joining me on episode 2 of the Great Debate Wrestling Edition. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Because.
Okay. Oh God.